Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 20th of August 2011. My name is Harold Fenton, and we bring you a show here at Truth News roughly once a week, and we try to cover things that are really underreported, and a lot of the time we barely manage to scratch the surface of what we really want to get into. We're self-funded. We're a purely homegrown production with no external or corporate funding. And that makes it difficult. But we continue, and one of these days we may find that we're able to expand our operation. Now today I'm bringing you an interview from a man from the UK by the name of Keelan Balderson. And Keelan is an independent blogger from the UK, and I'm going to find out more about his background when I get him on the show shortly. The reason why I'm having him on tonight is because I looked at a film that he made, which was posted on Facebook and a few other places about the UK riots. It's called Perfect Storm, the England Riots documentary. And I really strongly recommend this film. It's been really well made, obviously put together quite quickly since the riots. And there's some really good analysis in there. And it basically provides a context and it really addresses some of the points that we actually brought up in the last show. So I'm really looking forward to that interview, which is coming up shortly. In the meantime, let's just have a little look at what's happening in Australia. Okay, New South Wales motorists are being urged to plan their journeys ahead of time as 11 protest convoys hit the major roadways of New South Wales en route to the national capital. Convoys of trucks, cars and caravans from across the country are on their way to Canberra this weekend as part of an anti-government convoy of no confidence. And just looking at an article here from the Sydney Morning Herald, and there's a map here that shows all of the routes that have been taken by various parts of the convoy. It really does cover the entire country. The participants have taken issue with a range of government policies, including the proposed carbon tax and the former ban on the live export of cattle. The 11 convoys are travelling through New South Wales today and tomorrow, with heavy delays expected on major highways. So that is a very significant development, because as we've seen over the last year, the pressure on the government to abandon the carbon tax policy has just been growing and growing, fueled by the anger at the betrayal, at the dishonesty of Julia Gillard's complete reversal of policy. And this is seen really as an undermining of the democratic process, because a lot of people have said that she really would not have been elected if she had gone to the election saying, we're going to give you a carbon tax. She made a very strong statement that there was not going to be a carbon tax. And, of course, that influenced people's vote. So a lot of people around the country, very, very strong movement now within people, and it's at all levels of society, in all walks of life. People feel that we've got to do something about this. We've got to restore some sort of normal governance. But of course, we know, those of us who research these types of things in more depth, of course, know that Tony Abbott is probably not really the solution. I mean, he's not going to bring in a change that's going to be significantly different. And if you look at what Tony Abbott's saying, he actually supports the underlying goals of the carbon tax, but he's saying, well, we're going to do it in another way. But it's still better because it's not a tax. And I'm still hopeful that we do get a change of government so that this tax is actually rolled back or never actually legislated in the first place. But of course, we don't really know where the Liberal Party's headed with it. And we know that the corporate oligarchy is trying to bring this about, trying to engineer it. And we know it's about social engineering. We know it's about world governance. We know it's that the environmental issue is being used to bring about an agenda and a type of societal change that these people want anyway. And it's so clear, it's just so obvious that that's what's going on. And yet that, unfortunately, is something most people don't fully grasp. So it's our responsibility on this show to continually reinforce that. Peace. We have voices. Next story is the MP Gillard must protect. And this story, of course, follows very closely on the heels of the previous one because there is a very slim majority held in Parliament and the political demise of a single member is enough to tip the balance and trigger a by-election that could usher in a new government. Now, I've got an article here from The Australian. This reality is facing the Gillard government, which explains the zeal with which the coalition has this week rounded on allegations levelled at New South Wales Labor backbencher Craig Thompson. Now, the whole meat of this story is based around claims that the MP was using his credit card to buy the favours of prostitutes. And I've got a little video here that can document some of those facts for you.
Gillard government in all of this is that if criminal charges are laid against Craig Thompson and he is convicted, if that were the case, he would have, and he was convicted of a crime that carries a penalty of a year or more, he would have to leave Parliament. And if he left Parliament, there would have to be a by-election in his marginal Central Coast seat of Dobell, and given the current state of the polls, it would be a pretty safe bet Labor would lose that by-election. They would therefore lose their one-seat majority in the House and therefore lose government, basically. So it's a lot more than just about the future of Craig Thompson, it's about the future of the Labor government. Now, we must be careful. No charges have been laid. No, there was a complaint made to the police on the Central Coast about 2 weeks ago. The police announced on Sunday just gone. They weren't investigating it. There wasn't enough there to warrant an investigation. So I think you should bear that in mind. However, what we are seeing now is an increasing, I guess if you like, prima facie case that Thompson misused his credit card when he was a union official. Now, he has denied that in the past. He denied it so much that he sued Fairfax. He then withdrew that case, that defamation case, as more and more sort of stuff, or, you know, evidence, if you like, was discovered by Fairfax lawyers. In the Sydney Morning Herald today, there's more sort of prima facie, you know, evidence that it was him using that card. He is denying that. So it goes to his credibility.
Reports yesterday and in the papers last night are completely untrue. I've denied these allegations before. There was nothing there that was new at all.
Now, the opposition will be calling for the police and the DPP to, you know, to instigate an investigation and lay charges, but missing from that is the someone making a complaint. Now, if the Health Services Union, which is his old union, doesn't make a complaint, and you'd have to think they won't, given they're a union and they don't want to drag down a Labor government, then it's going to be a bit hard to see how this actually goes anywhere in the legal sense. But it won't stop the opposition putting pressure on authorities to do something, and bear in mind now you have a Liberal government in New South Wales, and you know, we all know pressure can be brought to bear through back channels. So Labor is worried about it. Yes, they'd rather this isn't happening. It's also sucking oxygen again away from what the things I'd rather be talking about, the economy and disabilities and aged care and all their policies. And Julia Gillard has now 3 days in a row expressed confidence in Craig Thompson. You know, she's got no choice. She's got to stand by him because her government depends. embarrassing detail emerges. It starts to drag her down, so they're all getting dragged into the muck with him. And generally, it's a fairly unfortunate situation.
Well, there we have it. A very serious situation developing for the government with this scandal brewing. And look, it does seem a little odd that this has happened at this time. And I've, you know, been thinking about this for a while now, and I've just been discussing it with people. And there is a possibility that this scandal, in a sense, has actually been manufactured. And what I mean by this is that there are actually forces within the Labor Party that are trying to scuttle the carbon tax, just as there are forces within the general population and a large part of the Liberal Party is against it. There are people within the Labor Party that are against it. Now, this is kind of a dirty trick, but it could be that finding the dirt on this guy was actually one way of avoiding the inevitable. So that's a possibility. And I only say it because apparently the original allegations, and I have some links here for this, were brought about by a Labour man by the name of Graham Richardson. And one must wonder why someone within Labour would actually be trying to stir up trouble within Labour. But this, to me, this basically addresses the fact that the major political parties are not really independent. They're not really separate from each other. And we really have to start thinking differently when we look at political parties to understand that there is a higher level of decision-making, and that quite often left and right and political positions are just used to massage public opinion in a particular direction. But when, as we've seen, when it's not working, then sometimes the policies have to be adjusted. And it looks to me as if the carbon tax is not working. It looks to me as if there really is going to be some kind of insurrection if they try to bring it in. I mean, this truck convoy heading to Canberra is very serious stuff. And it's the sort of thing we've seen around the world with increasing civil unrest. And I think that there's going to be change. So I'm going to leave those stories now because we're about to go into our next segment and our interview for tonight. Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back to the show. Well, tonight it's my great pleasure to have on the show Keelan Balderson from the UK. And as I mentioned earlier, I watched the film that he made recently, very recently, in fact, and I thought it was really excellent analysis, really kind of reflected a lot of the thoughts that I've been having and some of the things we talked about on the last show. And he agreed to come on at very short notice. And Keelan's runs a site called wideshut.co.uk, which has a lot of news in it, and I believe it's got a weekly podcast also. Welcome to the show, Keelan.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, look, it's great to have you on. Really, really interested to know, I guess, more of your perspective of what's going on in the UK. Can I just ask, where are you based in the UK?
Thankfully, I'm more in the countryside, kind of out of the way of things. So, I mean, I wasn't in the thick of it, but sure. Yeah.
Sure. And your little film that you put together there, I guess you just compiled news footage and stuff that was available. Was any of it kind of shot by yourself or people that you connected with?
There's a few people I contacted, yeah, but mainly it was just YouTube clips, yeah. News footage, just sort of compiled together into one kind of narrative.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it certainly illustrates what I would call the deeper context of what's actually going on, and that affects a lot of other countries. It's not just the UK. But what do you see happening now, Keelan, with the aftermath of this and the alleged, you know, crackdown that's going to occur from the government? How is that actually going to unfold, do you think?
Well, just on the fallout, I think the one good thing that has come out of it is that people are now coming together. Communities have come together to help each other and organise each other to help with the cleanup. So, I mean, if you're into the real anarchism philosophy, you know, not this G20 smashing stuff up thing, but the real concept of anarchism.
Sure.
I think this is quite a good example that people don't need government to tell them what to do. They don't need the government to sweep in and fix things. When left to their own devices, people will help each other out, and that's what we've been seeing. But with this crackdown, I mean, David Cameron, our Prime Minister, he essentially says one thing and then he does another. He says, oh, we've got these deep societal problems. We need to get to the root causes of these things. And then he just goes, all right, well, we need to throw everyone in jail. We need to shut down social media. We need to do all these things. And it's like, well, do you want to get to the deep societal issues in the country, or is that just lip service?
Yeah, look, I mean, I was slightly amazed that they played that address on the radio here live. And, you know, when he was saying there about we need to get to the deeper issues, I sort of thought, well, maybe that's going to be something good. And then he launched straight into this law and order tirade and basically just treating the people who have done this as just some sort of blight on society, something that just needs to be kind of, I mean, eliminated, you know, even exterminated. I mean, there seems to be no attempt to understand these people as human beings. And I find that very worrying, because when you have that sort of rhetoric, when you have that sort of language, the next steps can be, you know, virtual sort of ethnic cleansing, or, you know, whatever term you want to use. But I mean, basically, you've basically dehumanized a certain part of society. And, you know, I can assure you we've got the same sort of things in Australia, not on the same scale because it's a smaller population, but we've got the same social factors in large cities in Australia, in Sydney particularly, which can erupt in the same way. And we've also had these policies from the governments that are trying to deal with economic collapse that seem to be basically just raping the economy and taking away benefits and taking away things from people. And I know one of the measures that they were actually talking about implementing in the UK was that the families of some of these people who were in the riots would have their housing taken away from them. I mean, that's just an incredible sort of collective punishment. That reminds me of what they do in Israel.
Yeah, it's a very reactionary kind of thing we've got going on now. And in my eyes, yeah, all it's going to do is re-inflame the situation. They want to take people's welfare away if they were involved in the riots. So, I mean, poor people that were rioting are just going to get a lot poorer. And, I mean, what are they going to do? They're probably going to turn to more crime to try and make up that money that they've lost. Another punishment, like you say, is that they're trying to evict whole families from their homes. So if one kid is caught in the riots, their entire family loses their house, just like that. One case was a kid and his mum, this 12-year-old boy, who all he stole was, and of course no one's condoning stealing, but yeah, all this kid stole was a bottle of wine, and now his mum and him face eviction from their council house. In fact, in some of these cases, eviction proceedings went ahead before the people were even convicted in court. So they're not even following any kind of due process. It's completely ridiculous. How is evicting a kid and his mum going to solve the deep societal problems in this country?
Well, if
another
anything,
case
yeah, so continue,
that
yeah.
luckily was overturned, they tried to give a mother of two a six-month jail sentence because she accepted, a £10 pair of stolen shorts. She wasn't even part of the riot. It was something her flatmate, said, "Oh, do you want these shorts?" She said, "Yeah," and then she nearly got a six-month jail sentence. But thankfully, she kind of appealed that. But it's just reactionary. They're just out with their pitchforks, and it's completely ridiculous.
It seems that these measures, if anything, are going to trigger more violence, because these are the sort of things that will actually cause people to get angry and hit the streets again. And so rather than fixing it, what they're doing seems to be almost a provocation to inflame it more. And in your documentary, you've got some quotes from people who are saying that that sort of police intimidation has been increasing and has been a real, a real bane on the life of people living in some of these areas. Is that your sense too? I mean, we've seen the increasing police powers given to in many countries, but in the UK and also in Australia over the years since terrorism became such a big issue, and of course they gave themselves more and more powers to basically stop and search. And Do you see that as actually having been a factor in what's created some of these problems?
Well, definitely in the inner cities, where there's this sort of blanket approach to stop and search and gang culture. Basically, everybody that lives in this area is automatically a gang member. And there's been a lot of injustice within these areas, and the people basically have had enough. And that's kind of what was the initial spark. We have to look at this guy, Mark Duggan. And fair enough. I mean, I'm not condoning hardcore drug dealers or gang members or whatever, if that's what this Mark Duggan guy was. Obviously, they ruin people's lives. And if there was evidence that he was some kind of gang member or drug dealer, he deserved to go to jail and deserved help and things like that. But, and there's a massive but there, this guy was pulled from a taxi by several officers, pinned to the ground, according to eyewitnesses. And the police themselves now admit that he was executed at point-blank range. And there's supposed to be such thing as due process in this country. There's supposed to be justice in this country. This is England. You know, this isn't some brutal dictatorship or police state where cops can just kill people and get away with it. And you can say, oh, you know, it's one less gangbanger on the streets. But once you start turning a blind eye to one situation, it quickly creeps up into other situations. And we've seen this stuff before. Let me try and pull up this figure. 333 people since 1998 have died in police custody, and not one police officer has been convicted. We've seen high-profile cases like the murder of Jean-Charles Dimenez after 7/7, where this innocent guy, who it turned out didn't jump the barrier, didn't run, but they shot him 9 times in the head.
Indeed,
we've seen the death of Ian Tomlinson at the G20, and they tried their hardest to cover that up with a dodgy post-mortem, false testimonies. And there's all these things, and there is a problem, I think, with policing in this country, and that is what sparked the initial rioting.
Yeah, look, the disturbing parallels there between the way this guy was executed and the Menendez case, it looks like certain parts of the police, certain factions within the police, have got this mentality, and they basically think they can just take people out when they need to. We're going to break. I've actually got a song here lined up, and then we'll be back for another couple of segments.
You're living at a time of extremism, a time of revolution, a time when there's got to be a change. People in power have misused it, and now there has to be a change, and a better world has to be built, and the only way it's going to be built is with extreme methods. And I, for one, will join in with anyone, don't care what color you are, as long as you want to change this miserable condition that exists on this earth. Thank you.
This is a song by a UK artist called Jimmy Jitsu.
Jimmy Jitsu, People's Army. One God and one love.
One love.
Oh. You gotta come together.
Unity, yeah.
Ha! I swear the smoke is caving my lungs in. London, it really is a dungeon. Police get dragged to corruption. Protesting, fill your ribs, crushing from a dungeon where the lies breed and thrive in abundance. The state of the world is currently disgusting. Everyone's lusting, no one is loving, no one's excusing, everyone's shoving. The crime rate is doubling, from London to Dublin. I'm angry, even the Irish blood inside my veins are bubbling. We're punching instead of cuddling, they praise money, not God. And act like everything's above him, respect means nothing. You can't even go clubbing without a motherfucker troubling. It's disgusting, cutting taxes and state schools. It's like teaching a kid how to be a carpenter without correct tools. Miseducated and brainless, being brainwashed by the Masons. But for them that's perfect, another generation to rape us. Until we don't have a purse left, I'll fight till my last breath. I'm a fighter, fighting for my freedom, the freedom of a nation. I've waited and waited with anticipation. Got a feeling of freedom and I can taste it. I want it now, I ain't waiting. I'm a fighter, fighting for my freedom, freedom of a nation. Waited and waited with anticipation. They took away our liberty without consent. The government's a rapist. This is our life. One love. The state of the planet is quite frankly embarrassing. The weight of the world on our shoulders, we carry it. Life is a film, the voice is the narrative. We're sharing the struggle, deep down we're panicking. Are you ready for the battle, or will you stand still like the mannequins? A perfect world of the people, just imagine it. The centre spray paint and sound of tins rattling. They watch us with satellites, but that don't matter, right? As long as we're watching TV, pump through the satellites. But as Scott Heron said, when shit pops off, it won't be televised. I'm scared for mankind, most minds are fed lies. Zombies in life, breathing but not quite alive. Trapped in the confines of their own minds. This is bigger than Coca-Cola, bigger than night, bigger than zeitgeist, bigger than bar fights, bigger than nightlife. We all gotta fight, right? All gotta grind, right? All live a life, right? All gotta fight, right? This is our time, we all gotta fight. Got a feeling of freedom and I can taste it. I want it now, I ain't waiting. I'm a fighter, fighting for my freedom, freedom of a nation. Waited and waited with anticipation. They took away our liberty without consent. The government's a rapist. Yeah, I just gotta talk now. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you see this world, it's not all physical, it's not all material, some of it's spiritual. And we're living in a system where to survive, you have to contribute to the corruption. But you're all against. We're subconsciously told from a young age that the things we supposedly need to be successful are things like large house, nice car, designer clothes. But we all buy into it, because about these things are seen as a second class citizen. And it just ends up with more profit for these fucking huge corporate money hungry snakes sitting at the top of the pyramid, sipping champagne and laughing in our fucking faces. Fuck them. Because if we don't, it's either being homeless or prisons or just fucking hungry. It's a catch 22, it's the way it's all laid out. But the upside is, there's more of us than there is them, and they will be their own downfall. I'm a fighter, fighting for my freedom, the freedom of a nation. I've waited and waited with anticipation. Got a feeling of freedom and I can taste it. I want it now, I ain't waiting. I'm a fighter, fighting for my freedom, freedom of a nation. Waited and waited with anticipation. They took away our liberty without consent. The government's a rapist.
welcome back to the show. I'm here tonight with Keelan Balderson from the UK, who's made a film called Perfect Storm, the London riots, the England riots. And on Keelan, just having a look at the page here from your website, I've noticed that there's a few comments there that suggest that people don't see the way that you see it. I mean, the tendency to want to just see the people who commit these acts as just scum is very strong, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I will clarify. I'm not condoning any kind of violent rioting, especially when people have died and local mum-and-pop businesses have been destroyed and things like that.
Yeah.
Violence obviously solves nothing.
Yeah.
It just gives the state more of a reason to oppress people. But the reason I made the video, and kudos to everyone that was actually on the ground and had the balls to film it all and to talk to people. As I say, fortunately, I'm tucked away in the country out of harm's way.
Yeah.
But I made the film to show the sickening hypocrisy of the system, whereby bankers can steal billions, you know, politicians can invade foreign countries without any kind of public consultation. They can fiddle their expenses and do all these things. And then when we have riots, mostly down to their own policies, they have the gall to take some kind of moral high ground. Let's call a spade a spade. The people that run England and a lot of the world are absolute scumbags that have stolen and harmed far more than any of these young people could ever do. You know, instead of coming out all guns blazing, you know, oh, shoot the scumbags.
Yeah.
How about we actually try and educate these people so they can channel their anger in a more productive manner?
Yeah, look, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's a theme that that we talk about a lot on this show, just the incredible hypocrisy, what seems to me the fake morality that has become the kind of the signature of the countries that are part of this this kind of axis of evil of the West. You know, it's like the ever since the 9/11 and the invasions of all these countries, the countries, and Australia is very much part of this, that are part of that, have used this language of morality to actually perpetrate crimes against humanity. And of course, there are protest movements, and you know, there are anti-war groups, but they get ignored. Everything just moves ahead relentlessly, and anyone who then doesn't conform to that is just seen as being somehow fringe and is not part of this concept. And they use terms like the international community, and they use terms like, you know, humanitarian intervention and kinetic military action. And there is a culture of deceit, a culture of propaganda. And I have to say, the BBC is one of the worst offenders in that area of basically just using a news vehicle as a propaganda vehicle. I don't know what your take on that is, but it's pretty extreme when you listen to the way the BBC basically repackages all this information to basically brainwash people. That's all I can say.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, over here in England, we have to pay something called a TV license, and I haven't paid that for a couple of years now, because why would I support my own brainwashing? These are the people that said there were weapons of mass destruction. These are the people that, you know, promote the phony war on terror. These are the people that are lying to us on a daily basis. So why would I pay that? And you see the subtle kind of tactics that they use. Even with these riots, they get this well-respected journalist, broadcaster in his own right, a man called Darkus Howe, on the news to get his perspective, right. And then they call him Marcus. They call him the wrong name, and then they cut him off all the time, and they say, "Oh, well, that might have happened, Marcus, but blah blah blah." And it's like they're trying to act like the parents of all the knowledge when, you know, they're the people on the ground. Let them speak.
Absolutely. So what's the current atmosphere like now? Is there do you feel that it's basically died down now, or is it still, you know, volatile?
Well, the rioting has basically fizzled out.
But right.
As we've talked about, there is this reactionary mentality where they just want to stomp everything out and just call them scum and move on. But what the middle classes, I think, need to realise is that it is going to get worse. A lot of them may be next in line as more cuts are made and as more draconian measures are put in place with this whole Ponzi scheme that's taking everybody's wealth and causing all of this mess. We thought these riots were bad, with out-of-control kids not giving a damn anymore. Well, what happens when the education cuts take full swing? We'll have a whole new generation of people that are way less educated than they are now and who don't care even more. And how are we going to contain future riots? We're facing 34,000 police cuts. They were stretched already. So it doesn't look good, really. It doesn't.
Do you what are the planned cuts that are coming up for the UK? I'm not totally up to speed with how the UK has had to respond to all of the problems in other EU nations. Are we looking at austerity measures in the UK at the moment?
Yeah, well, it's blanket austerity measures, cuts to police, cuts to education, cuts to healthcare, selling things off, privatising them. It really is actually in a bad state. And people they don't seem to want to admit it. It's like, we're England, we're okay. No, we're not okay. We have a 4.8 trillion national debt. And that's only going to go up. And one thing I find funny is that people are coming out, you know, all angry. Oh, my tax money is gonna pay for these riots. Hold your horses there. Your tax money is already going to pay a 4.8 trillion national debt that you didn't create.
Yeah.
And you're worrying about an extra 200 million. I did a little bit of math for the film, and I basically just added up the banker bailout, the invasion of Libya, and this corporate tax evasion that the government are letting these big corporations get away with. And for the riots to be on the same level as all of that financial looting, they'd have to have 4,320 more riots. So people need to get their priorities straight.
Yeah, like that was an incredibly well-presented set of facts there in your film. And of course, the banker bailout is really the heart of the evil here. I mean, the banker bailouts, which took place all over the Western world, America and Europe particularly, have been just criminal. I mean, there is really no other way to describe it. And I think until that is addressed. There's this concept of the social contract. I mean, it's a concept that goes back to sort of philosophical ideas from the Enlightenment, and the social contract is a concept that that the people will accept a government and will accept sort of restrictions and laws, provided that the government reciprocates and provides the things that the people expect. But when that contract is broken, then you can expect violence. And again, I'm not certainly endorsing that, but you know, writers like, you know, Voltaire and people like that basically said this hundreds of years ago that this will happen when the social contract is broken, when governments lose their legitimacy, there will be violent uprising, and of course it will be there will be an attempt to portray that as just criminality. But I mean, that again, that's like a 19th century thing as well. I mean, if you actually go back to the way this country, Australia, was formed, I mean, basically they were economic refugees who had to steal to survive, who were then called criminals, and they were shipped off to Australia. And that, you know, that's kind of the mentality that was behind the construction of this country that I live in. But it's incredible that all this time later, the same mentality is applied to people who are, you know, in this underclass. And it's just an underclass. I mean, I guess it's people who really don't have a potential of working. There isn't really work for them. They are dependent on government handouts, and it's been cultivated that way, and it's just grown decade after decade. I mean, is there any way out? Can you foresee any way out for this culture of people who are dependent on government handouts?
Well, I mean, you get called a fearmonger if you don't have some kind of all-inclusive solution to save the world, but there is no easy solution because the corruption goes right to the core of the system. Personally, you know, I'd like to see an end to the EU. I'd like to see all the troops home tomorrow and an end to green subsidies and secret taxes based off the global warming hype. In terms of the banking system, we need to implement some kind of, and I think they're trying to do that. It's a little bit late because they've already got away with it. But this Glass-Steagall system of ring fencing where you separate the gamblers and the speculators from the regular high street banks, that needs to be put in place as soon as possible. We need to drastically increase the reserves that banks have to hold because they've been essentially loaning out money that they don't even have, creating it out of thin air and then demanding it back with interest. That's a complete scam. And how can we allow private entities to loan to the government? It just puts the government on a fishing line to the banks. There's so many things, and it's not going to be an easy way out because it goes right to the core.
Yeah, really excellent points. Brennan, we'll just take another short break, then we've got one more segment. Are you good to stay on for the final segment?
Yeah, sure.
Great, cheers.
Sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Just here with Keelan today, Keelan Balderson from the UK. Sorry, I think I called you Brendan there a minute ago. Sorry about that. I just got confused.
No worries.
Keelan, can I just ask a little bit about your site, your news site? How long has this been going?
I would say 2 years, maybe three okay. years. I'm not even sure, but
okay, yeah,
it's basically similar. Just, you know, one man trying to spread a bit of information, a bit of alternative news that the mainstream doesn't cover.
Sure.
I also do a radio show on Mondays on resistradio.com.
Okay.
Just, you know, trying to spread some awareness.
Excellent. Yeah, wideshut.co.uk. And Resistance Radio is a live format broadcast, isn't it?
Yeah.
Great, yeah. And so what other topics have you been looking at on your news site?
Well, my most extensive kind of investigation, or whatever you want to call it, was the 7/7 London bombings. And I actually did a quite an extensive film, about 4.5 hours long, looking into that whole thing.
Excellent.
And I
just saw
that.
I'm
actually working on a remake of that, because I've kind of learnt with this new film that I did, it's probably better to make it shorter and more to the point so the average person can see it and go, oh, yeah, cool, rather than this massive kind of encyclopedic film that I first did. I'm going to shorten it down and re-release it, I think.
Yeah, great, because often people just don't have the time as well, and it's when it's really long, you just think, oh, I'll save that for when I've got a weekend to spare. But I just saw the ad for that on your site. I'd actually really like to check it out myself. 4 hours. Wow. So there must be a lot of material in there.
Yeah. Well, it basically, it covers the day itself, all the anomalies in the official story, which was obviously penned by an anonymous civil servant. You know, they got so much wrong in there, even the train time that these people supposedly got to go to London and things like that. And then I get into the history of Al-Qaeda and how it's essentially contrived. It grew out of an intranet system that the Mujahideen used, and the Mujahideen was obviously funded by the CIA. I get into Bin Laden and a bit about 9/11, you know, just the whole shebang, start to finish.
That is really fascinating. I'm quite keen to check it out. Do you have proof that the alleged bombers were connected to intelligence services? Because this idea has been floated a few times. Do you have any evidence to prove that?
I don't prescribe to the idea that these men had nothing to do with it, or that they weren't there on a day, or things like that. I think that was a bit speculative right at the start when people were looking into it. There's a lot more that's come out now, but there's absolutely connections to intelligence agencies. You know, they were in contact with all sorts of intelligence assets who were instructing them to go to terror training camps that were run by FBI assets. And when they come back, they get phone calls from another intelligence asset. And there's all the, it's basically, in my opinion, they were sort of groomed patsies in a wider kind of operation.
And this is the style, isn't it? I mean, this is the way, I mean, this is fully acknowledged that the major crime-fighting organizations in the US, the UK, and in Australia, they actually seed and fund terrorism operations that then they call sting operations. And quite often they'll pay for the ingredients, they'll encourage potential terrorists to concoct a plan, and they'll actually be recording telephone conversations while they do it. And then they have a high profile bust, and they say, "Look, we've foiled another terrorism plot," and you look into it, and this is fully acknowledged. It's actually happened here. It's happened in Melbourne. It's happened in Sydney, where the people concerned were really just patsies of the Australian Federal Police, and they never would have been able to bring these plans to conclusion on their own anyway. And typically, they're actually mentally disturbed. Very commonly, they've got some sort of mental illness problem as well.
Yeah, I look to there was the Christmas tree bomber who apparently wanted to blow up some Christmas, I don't know, I think it was in one of the American cities, some Christmas tree sort of turning on the light celebration. He wanted to blow all that up. And basically, the FBI had been chatting to him via email, coaxing him along. And then they were the ones that gave him the dud bomb to begin with.
Sure.
And as soon as he goes there to press it like an idiot, they swoop in and arrest him, even though they set him up completely. Or you've got the underpants bomber who was led onto the plane without a passport, bypassed security. It came out that higher-ups in the intelligence agencies ordered all that to happen. And then he sparks some firecracker in his pants, and all of a sudden the whole of the Western world has to have these naked body scanners that were already there before it happened. It's ridiculous.
It's just so ludicrous, isn't it? And of course, coming out of the UK, we had, first of all, the shoe bomber, which was the precursor for making us take our shoes off when we go through security checkpoints. Then we had the liquid explosives plot. And so each time there is some new foiled plot, there is some new level of draconian, you know, invasion of your privacy that they're allowing themselves. And but, of course, getting back to the riots again, and what we've all been afraid of has now come to pass. I mean, all of this apparatus, all of this mechanism of totalitarian control, which we thought, or some people thought, look, it's just for the terrorists, it's just for the foreigners, it's just for these extremists from overseas. Well, this can now be used against ordinary people. And this had been predicted. And this was why people have been up in arms about it as a really serious problem that we've been lied to about terrorism, because it appears to have been part of a pretext to just give government more and more power. So what do you think of the level of awareness of this now? Do you think more people are actually aware of that, or are people still just sleepwalking into, you know, into a kind of Orwellian nightmare?
Well, I was quite optimistic, you know, in the last year And then the whole royal wedding came about, and I actually went to that to sort of protest it. Thankfully, the people I was with, we didn't get arrested. But a lot of people did get arrested before they could even get to the event. And this ties in with the whole social media crackdown that we're seeing because of the riots. They say, oh, we're going to implement this to stop people that we think or maybe committing a crime. But if we go back to the royal wedding, they completely abused that system. They were trawling social networks and stuff to see what people were going to be doing on the day. And then they arrested loads of people just, you know, they just wanted to go and share a different opinion with these zombies walking around with their flags. And they were stopped. There was an elderly couple who wanted to do some street theatre where they were going to sort of chop the head off some, you know, mock, I don't know, you know what I mean, some dummy, yeah, or something.
Sure.
And they were arrested before they could get there. During the event, people with leaflets were forced to give their details over. They arrested some kid because he had a pen in his bag, and this kid was crying. There was a group of people dressed up as zombies, I guess, to illustrate the masses and their adoration for the royals. They were carted off in a police van. It's ridiculous. So if you think this is just to stop people that might be committing a crime, no, it's to stop people that they want to stop having an opinion.
Indeed. And of course, there's been talk about similar measures in America. I read some stuff today that the authorities are in the US are actually looking at what's happened in the UK, and they're setting up Twitter and Facebook monitoring services. I mean, the irony there is that we know they've been manipulating Twitter and, yeah, Facebook, and we know they've actually been creating armies of zombie Facebook accounts to actually try and influence social unrest in Libya and Egypt. I mean, the irony is, and the stupidity of it is just you know, it's ridiculous. That on, yeah, on the one hand they're saying isn't it great that Facebook has been used for these liberation movements in the Arab Spring, and exactly, you know, exactly the same phenomenon. They're saying we've got to stamp it out in the UK. I mean, it's pretty dumb, isn't it?
It is.
Just
on the Facebook censorship thing, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've had articles mysteriously disappear when I've posted them up. Actually, during the riots, I had this status that I wanted to post, and it wouldn't post. And I thought to myself, is that because it's got the word riots in it? So what I did was space the word riots out so it was each individual letter on its own, like, character line, and then it magically posted. So they were clearly censoring certain posts based on the word riots. So that's just plain and clear censorship.
Look, tyranny is dumb. You know, tyranny is stupid. And I think if anything, that should make us feel more confident that we can beat it. Because if it stoops to that stupidity level of filtering out a word because they think that word is bad and they think they can stop things by doing that, they're just so out of touch. They're so out of touch with reality. And the positive I see out of this is that we who understand what's going on, we just actually have to educate more people. And obviously you're doing that with your work there. And it's really important. Kudos to you for that. And I mean, it's tough because, you know, so many of the people and the kids who are engaging in these antisocial activities don't really have a clue. And I mean, they do have a sense that they've been screwed. I take your point there from your film, and that is real, and there is a reaction to that, but there is an education problem. You know, it's our responsibility sometimes to educate people on all levels to understand the real social mechanism of tyranny. Look, we're just about out of time. It's been great.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, really, really good discussion, and I'd like to do it again sometime. And if you'd ever like to get anyone on to your show from this end, you're most welcome.
Yeah, sure thing, man. I'll talk to you sometime soon.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Keelan.
Cheers.
Cheers. Well, that brings to an end another Truth News Australia episode. Hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you'll spread the word and come back next week and leave some comments on the website, post it to your Facebook page, tell your friends. Looking forward to speaking to you again.